Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Aaron McReynolds, co-founder and CEO of Alicio.
We see in the future essentially a three-legged stool. And to us, that three-legged stool is comprised of the three most important parts of any sales organization: customers, revenue, and then people. And so you talk about customer data, Salesforce, HubSpot, you talk about revenue data, Clary, Gong, Outreach. And then when you talk about the people, how do we understand the people who are your most important asset and most valuable asset? That's almost where the crickets come up.
This is Aaron. He's a tech entrepreneur on an ambitious mission. He's got over 8 years of experience in sales and sales management. Working for companies like Qualtrics, Okta, and Lacework gave him a proven track record of leading and growing sales teams in various markets, such as enterprise, corporate, and international. The challenges that he faced during that period inspired him and his co-founder to found Alicio in October 2022. And their mission? To empower sales professionals with the tools and insights that they need to achieve their goals and refine their sales teams. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Aaron to my podcast. We explore why, instead of building a tool primarily for revenue operations, he decided to bet on end users and thereby challenging the traditional approach of building tools for backend operations. We discussed the toughest challenges he had to overcome early on his journey, thereby prioritizing the success of the business over personal considerations. He elaborates on his minimalist funding approach, acknowledging the necessity of funding, but still advocating for taking a lean approach. And last but not least, he explains why he and his team decided to take AI off their roadmap. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how he identified a gap in sales tools despite using all the popular ones. Secondly, how they are creating a market perception to be a much bigger company than they really are. Thirdly, Aaron's leadership style to use humility to make up for the things he doesn't know as a SaaS CEO. And lastly, why he's focused on understanding and rewarding individual sales performance, thereby challenging the norm of board and organizational metrics. So hi, Aaron. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that was an easy one. When I got connected to your CMO, I started to look into what you're doing. And sales tech is one category that I always get fascinated by, particularly because the innovation is going so fast. And particularly also what you're doing there in terms of connecting. It's all about connecting sales to performance, and how do you do that at an organizational level is something that fascinates me. But before we start talking about your company, what drives you? What gives you energy?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, for me, looking back on my life, actually goes back to when I was 4 years old. I actually had Guillain-Barré syndrome, and I was paralyzed when I was 4 years old from head to toe. And so I think going through that experience so young in my life, you almost get to this point where every day you don't take it for granted, right? The ability to run, the ability to walk. And so my entire life, I've been very competitive because it was one of those things that I thought, I may never have and I may never be able to get to experience. So I've been an athlete throughout my life. I still play football regularly, and by football, I mean soccer football for the American audience. And that for me is just kind of that internal drive and engine is a competitive nature. And I think what it does is, to me, it leads to like a sense of freedom, right? And that's the other big piece for me in my life. And I guess in why we wanted to go and do this, I've been in sales for 10 years. And that was that drive, that engine was the competitive nature of sales. And when we get into Alessio, you'll see how we've incorporated that. But again, I think you go back to what is it that kind of takes you to that place of happiness and freedom and clarity of mind. And for me, it's that kind of drive to get to that state of freedom. So,
cool. I like that. Got a couple of questions around that, primarily also because you got seed funding there. So, I mean, I like what you're saying. I mean, and I didn't know about, you know, how it all started for you, paralyzed and taking it from there. So kudos for what you've accomplished so far.
Thank you.
10 years in sales, then you decided to found the company, Alessio. What was the problem that you saw that was screaming for a solution that you're developing?
Yeah, no. We have the fortune, I think, when we started the company of building a product around a pain that, to your point, I'd been experiencing for 10 years. So it actually originates back in my first sales job. You know, we had every single sales tool under the sun. Salesforce, Clary, Gong, Outreach Chorus, you name it, we had it, we were paying for it. And still we felt like there was a gap. And for us, that gap was answering a very simple question, which none of those products seem to do, is, you know, how do you know what a great day in sales look like? You have your people, you have your team. How do you know that they've come in, given you a full 8 hours in the day? And how do you know that they did the right activities in the day? Being busy doesn't mean they had a great day. It just means they were busy. And so that's kind of where this all started. You know, we were tracking that within a spreadsheet. I did that for a number of years and started to see this correlation between the reps that were tracking the productivity in the spreadsheet, those that were hitting quota, those that were going to President's Club. And then when COVID hit, now this ability to, you know, walk down a row, see who had their headsets on, were making the cold calls, who was in the meeting rooms, holding the demonstrations, that went away overnight. And so now you had to go to a level of trust with your people that they were working. And what I found is with all these different data silos, it was hard to understand the narrative. I find myself going to Salesforce to see where, you know, what deals were in pipeline, going to Clary to see the staging, going into Outreach to see how many emails have been sent, going to Gong to listen to the call recordings. And so then when you want to go in and actually train and coach at the individual level, I'm going to 6-7 different systems to understand the narrative behind one person. And that always felt like such a hardship and pain. And so by default, you don't do that. You just say, hey, everyone make more cold calls. Everyone go and do more demonstration meetings. And so with Alessio, we wanted to be able to provide a way to understand the individual. Every manager wants to know how to coach and train the individual, but kind of lacks the tooling to be able to do so. And so what we found is by creating the platform, now reps are able to report what they've done, which we all have within us internally, almost, you know, look what I have done, look what I have accomplished. And with that COVID narrative, it became so difficult to do that. That can now roll up to the managers. The managers get the data that they've been craving, and they get to go in and train the individual on their weaknesses and their strengths. And we can explore the product further, but we've gamified the entire process so that you get rewarded and recognized for those efforts, which again, as salespeople being competitive in nature, we felt was a crucial element to the platform.
Yeah, fascinating. I can completely understand what you're saying there. You know, it's not the lack of tools. It's answering a couple of simple questions. Yeah, the more tools at the end, the harder answering the question becomes. I saw it on your website and it instantly hit me when I saw that thing. Like, what does a good sales day look like?
It's tough to answer, right?
It's tough to answer, yeah.
And it differs from an SDR on their first day. They can have a really good day in sales, and an enterprise sales rep can have a really good day, and they're completely different. Right? Completely different. Even though they're both salespeople, they're both sell for the same company, a good day to those two individuals is very different. And so within Alessio, what we've done is we benchmarked every single user. Every single user comes in and gets 10 points a day. How you get there, that's up to you. So you pick the KPIs that are important down to the individual, because an SDR is going to have a different day to an enterprise rep, and the weightings behind those as well. So think about fitness, right? We've benchmarked on 10,000 steps a day. You know that you've had a good day in health. We do the same thing in Alessio. You get your 10 points, you know that you've had a good day in sales.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's as simple as that. And yeah, I completely agree. Yesterday I had a conversation with one of my clients about hunters and farmers. Another thing, you know, selling the same product to the same customers. One is a hunter, one is a farmer. A good day for a farmer is a bad day for a hunter. And that is so true. So yeah, so what is the opportunity if you get this right? You know, what do you see? I mean, you went to market in April, I heard, and you got your customers paying for it. Your first more than a dozen right now, 13, you said. What differences are they starting to see?
Yeah, you know, the main thing we try and focus on is the ability, like I mentioned, to understand the individual, coach and train them. And what that ultimately leads to is an increase in productivity. By gamifying that process, rewarding the efforts, instead of it being the piece of sales that we loathe and kind of fear, we're trying to turn the productivity piece of sales into something that people are engaged in. We want it to be almost cult-like in nature. When you go to college, you get a GPA, right? You do all these courses over 4 years and you come out with a GPA that tells the narrative of what you've done for the last 4 years. You get to go and tell that story when you try and get your first job. In sales, the only piece of the story that we get to tell is quota attainment. But that varies from organization to organization. You could have been selling Zoom in 2020 and hitting 350% of quota, right? Everyone needed that product at that time. That doesn't tell me that you were the one that was out making the cold calls and doing the demonstrations and worked and had the grit every day. It just tells me that you sold a phenomenal product. And so we essentially look at it, this 10-point framework of almost like a GPA in sales. You can go in and say, not only did I hit 150% of quota, I was also metriced on getting 10 points every day. And I averaged across a year, 10.5, right? I went above and beyond in my productivity efforts. I have hard work, I have grit, I have tenacity, I self-source my own deals. And we think that's a really important part of the narrative. Kind of before when we were talking, you know, the sales space, extremely dense, extremely saturated. We're just seeing consolidation in the marketplace, right? A lot of these tools are going out and fighting for the same area. We see in the future, essentially a three-legged stool. And to us, that three-legged stool is comprised of the three most important parts of any sales organization: customers, revenue, and then people. And so you talk about customer data, Salesforce, HubSpot, you talk about revenue data, Clary, Gong, Outreach. And then when you talk about the people, how do we understand the people who are your most important asset and most valuable asset? That's almost where the crickets come up. And so we don't actually call ourselves a sales performance management platform. It's a people performance management platform, but we understand the go-to-market organization, which is different to the rest of the organization. We're comped differently, we're promoted differently. And so we understand that space. We understand the tools that exist today. We understand the data that is important to the leaders. But at the end of the day, we care about the people, right? We care about the people. That's what's most important to us. So that's the focus for Alessio right now.
Yeah, I can imagine. Doesn't that, by the way, lead to when you get in contact with organizations that the people that you actually want to sell to say, this is for HR?
Yeah, you know, we thought about that, right? Well, the minute we put people in front of our product, but we know who we need to sell to. It is the CROs, it's the heads of sales. It's also the sales managers, right? You could have a team of five reps. You still want to know how they're performing. So to us, there's no organization too small where this is applicable and no enterprise too big where it's applicable. Every manager has that same question. How do I know that my people had a good day today? How do I train my people on the right things? And to your point, hunters, farmers, everybody is different in the job description, in what success looks like, even though at the end of the day, it may be revenue attainment. How you get there is going to be very, very different. And so when we look at, you know, who we sell to, we still feel that our narrative, it goes to the sales leaders, right? That's where it falls. But they don't think about their people, right? They think about the customers and this customer data. They think about revenue and revenue data. But to get there, the very, very top of the funnel, that's your people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's your top performance, and you want everybody in the team to be a top performer. And how do you get there? And at the end, that's where you then start to deal with people, because no person is the same.
Yeah. No person is the same. Yeah. If it was a pure science, we'd all be rich. If it was just an art, we'd probably all be poor. And so we think it's that blend of, can you give the right data to the managers to go and train and coach while still allowing, you know, and something that's very important to me, that individualism that comes into sales, right? I've never been a massive cold caller in my career. I was never an SDR. I jumped straight in as an AE at my first organization. And so I think I missed that element of sales, but I loved writing emails. I love reaching out to individuals. I loved on-sites. I love, you know, when I get to the demonstration phase. And my managers would always come to me and say, hey, you're having success, but how do I replicate what you're doing when I'm out here telling my reps to go make more cold calls? And so that's kind of our response to this is, if someone's not good at cold calls, why are you asking them to do 60 of them a day? It doesn't make any sense. That takes 4 to 5 hours, right, to go make those calls. What if they're really good at email or LinkedIn messaging? What if they have a brand on LinkedIn that commands 30,000 followers? Why are you telling them to go cold call 30,000 people? And so even now, you know, we work with a company called Warmly. Their kind of narrative is that cold calls are dead, cold emails are dead. Everything needs to be warm, right? In this environment that we live in, everything needs to be a warm intro, a warm outreach, a warm introduction. And we believe that's the same way. And so by allowing the individual to essentially showcase what they're good at while training them and refining them on their areas of weakness, that ultimately is going to lead to the greatest success and the thing we all crave for, which is revenue attainment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Fascinating. Well, going back to the moment you founded the company, I'm not sure whether you were developing already with a team prior to kind of really founding it. But in that first year now, if you look back at it, what has been a very important decision that you took very early on that really is starting to bear fruits right now?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a tough one to talk about. But, you know, when we started the organization, there was three of us. And early on, we had to make a very tough decision that maybe that founding team wasn't the right founding team. And again, this was a personal friend and we're still in touch and we're still good friends. But we knew that for the business and for that point in time and the fundraising efforts that we were going through, it wasn't the right fit. It wasn't the right three and ultimately left a massive gap in what we were trying to go and achieve. And so we had to make that hard decision. And we're talking about within kind of the first 2-3 months of incorporation. And that still to date is the hardest thing I've probably ever had to do in my entire career, other than fundraising back in March of 2023. But that was the hardest thing I ever had to, because it was on a personal level. But we knew at that point in time that for the business to succeed, right, and you almost have to get to that point where it's not about you anymore, it's about the business, we had to make that decision early on. But I think, you know, what came from that is when we went back to the VC that ended up leading our round for us, they said that that was one of the most important pieces in why they backed us as founders, because they saw that we had made a hard decision before we'd barely even started, right? An extremely difficult decision. And you have to have almost that ruthless nature when you start a company. And that probably isn't within my nature normally to be that way. I'm a people person. So I have a people product. And so to make that hard decision back then, yeah, I still think to this day, I don't think we've had to do anything more difficult than that.
Uh-huh. How is that possible after only 3 months? I mean, what can you learn from that? How can you avoid something like that?
Yeah. I think for us, when we looked at creating the company, you know, the three of us were good friends. We had kind of this idea together. We would talk about different ideas. We'd been doing it for a number of years where we would come up with different concepts, something we could maybe go and do together and run together. But when push came to shove, and again, as difficult as it was, we didn't feel like that was the right founding team. And so I think, you know, when I talk to other founders, other leaders, you are going to make mistakes. You are going to have the wrong people in seats at times. You know, you want to move as fast as you can when you're in a startup, but moving fast means you are going to make mistakes, and you have to be able to see those mistakes. And then you have to be able to go and correct them just as quickly as you made them. In fact, you have to go and correct them even faster. And so for us going forward, we I think even since that day, you know, we've had this mindset of measure twice, cut once, right? Let's double check, dot the I's, cross the T's, make sure we're making the right decision. You know, we just went through a massive brand refresh. The entire website is new. Our narrative is new. And so that was all part of that, is if we're going to go and do this, even though we have to do it quickly, right? Mm-hmm. We're a startup. There are always people coming for your lunch. We knew that if we're going to go and do it, we had to do it quickly, but we had to do it right. We didn't have the luxury of spending 2 to 3 years going and understanding our position in the market, you know, what would resonate from a color scheme. We just had to almost rely on intuition and then double check it with each other and then go and make that hard decision. I think that all kind of stems back to that of being able to move and pivot as quickly as possible, knowing that you are still going to make mistakes, but feeling confident in those decisions. And so I think I do. I still point back to that day. And again, probably the hardest thing we've ever done.
Yeah. Well, Now, thanks for sharing that, because these are not the things you like to talk about, because it's tough. So talk me through, you know, getting to your first 10 customers. What did you experience there? You know, because you're coming to a market, everybody believes, okay, you know, I have enough sales tools. My stack is way bigger than I already want to have. Now add another one on top of that. So what are the objections you typically get, and what makes people buy here?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, I think for us, that narrative is what we lead with. We just go in and we say, you know, today, with all the tools that you have, how do you know that your people have had a great day? And we'll just sit back and we'll be quiet in that moment. And it is one of those, okay, you've got me moments, right? Because people aren't able to go and do it. Or it's, hey, I have this combination of five or six different tools, and then I go and message RevOps and they'll create a dashboard for me, and then I can finally get that data. And then I say, okay, that's great for you as the manager or the leader. What about your reps? Do they know that they've had a great day? Probably not, because you're not paying for an expensive license for them to have that data.
Exactly.
And so for us, since day one, what we lead with our product is we will talk to sales leaders, but we'll always say, bring in an AE, bring in an SDR for this demonstration, because ultimately they're the ones that are going to be using this tool. They're the ones that aren't giving you the data that you need today, and see if they like it, see if it resonates with them. And so every product decision we have made since day one, we've tried to flip, you know, most sales tools, the concept of them, on their head. We didn't build this for RevOps. We built this tool for the end user, for the AE, for the SDR, for the manager, the ones that are using it every day. Why hold them back from having the data? Why hold them back from being able to create their own dashboards? Why hold them back from being able to run their own sales competitions?
Yeah.
Why hold them back from being able to understand what's going on in their own one-on-ones and their own pipeline reviews?
Let me make a small interruption here. Aaron just made a critical remark about the one thing that sets them apart from anyone else. Instead of building a tool for the sales managers, they build a tool for the sales reps. They're tapping into the competitive nature of this group of people to solve a massive business problem, top-line revenue growth, at the grassroots. It takes away the issue of treating every salesperson the same, and it focuses on understanding what works and what doesn't to do more or less of that. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They focus on the essence. Start with the end in mind, and then engineer back what's the root cause to address. And then they build new value possibilities. And with that, they can hit the right nerve and create momentum. You can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And so that's kind of been our story and our narrative from day one. Is we'll get someone on the phone. Their default response in their mind is, I have too many sales tools. And we kind of give that three-legged stool narrative and then ask that question. Okay, with all those tools, tell me what a good day looks like. And it's tough to answer. And that, again, that's why we did this in a spreadsheet format. Before we started Alicia, we made probably 30, 35 calls to sales leaders here in Utah and California and enterprise-grade sales teams and said, what do you do to answer this question today? And mm-hmm. the default response was a spreadsheet. And so for us, that was that light bulb moment of, if we're doing this in a spreadsheet, there is something here. And spreadsheets don't scale, right? The ceiling is very low. And so we said, if we go and build this tool that will give you insights into, you know, XYZ, would you buy it? And when we had enough yeses, that's when we knew we could go and create the product.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, well, not that fascinating. It's. I mean, you're in sales. You know how that all works. But at the end, what you lead is, you just confront them with the problem. There's no answer to it. So instantly, it's okay. I'll listen. Yeah. What does it take then to turn it into something that's not only okay, I understand it, but have it become mission critical?
Yeah. A good friend of mine, he actually did a session with us where he talked about, you know, dog food, right? When you think about the dog, you put the bowl in front of the dog, you put the dog food in, and it just devours it. They don't care if it tastes good. They don't care if it's, you know, grade one meat. They just eat that food. And then you try and take the bowl away and they're biting your hand off. And so we're very confident right now in where our product is at, and obviously we're refining it and evolving it every day. But we're confident enough to say, try this. Put it in front of your reps for 2 weeks, right? Put it in front of your reps for a month. Go and try it and then try and take it away. And so we did this. And the very first time we took the product away, within an hour and a half, I received an email from one of the AEs saying, did we just lose access to the platform? And which I was able to go back and say, yeah, you did, right? And then it's like, oh no, it's gone. And so I think when we felt that, we knew that we had something, right? And again, that's because we think we built a product for the end user. And so for us, that's when we think we know we have something, is if we go and take it away, is that demand still there once it's gone?
It's the ultimate test for product market fit, you know? Will they start screaming? And apparently they do. And that's magic. So what do you then do to start scaling that? How do you reach your audience and get through the noise?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, we don't have a ton of money in the bank. We're still early days. Our focus has been, you know, omni-channel in our approach. We think social selling is obviously having a massive moment right now. I'd say in the last year, 2 years, LinkedIn has become a trendy social media platform. There are influencers on LinkedIn. All of our buyers live on LinkedIn all day, right? It's the marketplace for salespeople. And so that's been our approach. You know, we've tried to create a brand and a feel around Alessio that we feel like we're 3, 4, 5 years down the road from where we are today. And that I think that by going down this LinkedIn road and going and delving into the social influencer route, we start to create this buzz. And I think anyone that we talk to, when they find out that there's, you know, six of us in a little WeWork here in Utah, we want that response to be, oh, wow, we thought you were further along than you are. You know, the product is better than we thought it would be at this stage. The customer service that we deliver, you know, that's our obsession right now, right? We want to deliver white glove service to every single customer. We Yep. want to feel bigger than we are. And so that's been a main focus. And so that noise element, again, we're in a dense marketplace. We're in a dense spot. I had a call yesterday with a team in Finland. Again, we're in Utah in America. This gentleman was in Finland and he gets on the phone and the first thing out of his mouth is, hey, you know, want to get brand new team, brand new sales team. It looks like everyone's on Alessio. Right. We have 13 customers, but if the perception is that everyone is on Alessio, we feel like we're doing something right. We're cutting through that noise. Exactly. And so, yeah, we're kind of marketing obsessed. We made a marketing hire very early, probably against most recommendations to go and hire someone so early in marketing. But we feel like that is the approach for us. We've started our own podcast, a Great Day in Sales podcast. We're inviting world-class sales leaders in to talk to us. And then they now know about our platform, right? And they get to go and tell their friends and family they're on a podcast talking about sales and it was Alessio. And so we are just trying to think outside the box with every decision that we make when it comes to marketing and cutting through that noise. How can we be different? How can we appear larger than we are? You know, how can we be the first thing you think about when you think about a good day in sales, when you think about your people in sales? We want to be that first name that comes to mind.
Yeah, very smart. Yeah, I mean, like talking to the Converted podcast, fantastic way to get the word out and to build a network. And at the end, also what those networks can do for you to spread the word, that's fantastic. And particularly to get that perception from people to say, hey, we think the whole world is on the platform already. You seem, well, larger than you really are. It's also, of course, like, why do you have to be an organization of 1,000 people? Yeah, if you can. I mean, I've spoken to 3 or 4 SaaS scale-ups, or scale-ups actually, yeah, that were under 15 people. But yeah, with a revenue per employee that was sky high, you know, this is the way to scale as well. So why do you always need to be big? Everything gets more complicated.
It gets more complicated. And again, I think, you know, we got our first check back in October, 250K. Yeah. We had to stretch 250K from October to May of this year, right? We've just been born in a different time period, right? This is not 2020 anymore. Every single dollar to us is important. I know everyone talks about, oh, you wear a lot of hats and, you know, when you're at a startup, like we wear a lot of hats because there's 5 or 6 of us, right? And so we have to go and do more. Our head of product, we hired him as a world-class head of product. He runs customer success for us. Right, that wasn't in his job description, but I've never seen someone pick something up so well, completely take it on board and just go and execute at the level that he does. But that's what we have to do. And so I think even going forward, even though, you know, we did a pre-seed round back in June, we still have that same mindset. We have a quote up on our whiteboard internally from Mark Cuban about how every dollar is sacred, right? And only spend it if you have to. Because we were born in this time period, we don't get the luxury of going and hiring 1,000 people in the next year. That's just not ever going to be our model. And so, yeah, we try and do as much as we can with a small group. And in fact, we drew a skull up on the board the other day. I know that Apple did this back in their early days. And I think the quote is, I would rather have a few pirates than the Navy, right? And that's our mindset is the few of us, if we're obsessed as we need to be, we can go and execute more than that 1,000-person organization. We believe that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah. And go for customer revenue, you know, deliver value. I mean, you already proven that with your customers calling you, whether they have lost access to the system, you know, that is when you got that level of stickiness and perceived value, that's where, you have something that people also are prepared to pay premium for. That is the best way of creating revenue and becoming profitable. And like to your point, create that freedom. So let's talk about a little bit about this. You decided very early in the journey to get funding. Of course, sometimes that starts because there is no funding, so you have to start somewhere. But was it a deliberate choice, or is actually what you hope for more of a bootstrap continuation forward?
Yeah, no, I think I came from a couple of different experiences. One, you know, I worked at Qualtrics for a number of years.
Sorry, that's
overnight success that was, you know, 17, 18 years in the making. They were bootstrapped. I think it's for 12 or 13 years. It's a phenomenal story about growth. But I think we looked in the mirror and said, could we go do that? I don't think so, right? I think we need to have some sort of accelerant here as we go to market, as we try and build out this product, as we try to tell our story. We need the fuel on the fire, I think, to go and do this. And so we bootstrapped for a little bit. And by bootstrap, we paid to build out an MVP and to get to the discussions that we needed to have. But we knew that if we wanted to go and create the product that we had in mind, a platform, that we were going to need that funding. And so, I guess kind of you laugh when you say you've lost your freedom when you do the VC route. But I think it's almost the opposite for us. I think they enabled us a freedom. We have a phenomenal cap table for the stage that we're at. Every single one of the VCs that we have, you know, the pleasure of working with have sat back and just enabled us to go and execute on our vision. You know, we didn't give away any board seats, so we still have that level of freedom right now. And, you know, obviously that will change in time. But if we look at who we have around the table, these are the people we want on the board with us right now. Like, these are people that trust us, that have enabled us from day one. They're sending us leads. They're introducing us to friends and family. Like, we have been very fortunate in that sense. And I know that's not everyone's experience.
Fortunately, exactly.
Yeah. But I think, you know, for us to go and to get to where we are in the short time period that we've been around, you know, we chalk it up to the VCs. We're grateful for them.
Yeah. Now, imagine this flywheel starts to really flywheel. You know, customers start to spread the words, you know, more and more customers coming on the platform, and you get to the point where revenue is just going fine. You know, you're making all the quotas and the aspiration that you have, profitability is there. Would you go back for another round, like a Series A, Series B? Or would you say, hey, maybe this is actually the way we can move forward?
I think the vision that we have for Alicio is so ambitious in nature that I think it's going to be crucial that we continue to take funding. Okay. I think to be able to go and execute on those goals and do it in the time period that we want to be able to go and do it, I think it is going to be crucial for our story. And so, we are looking at doing a seed round soon and kind of, again, putting more fuel on the fire, right? Like, the embers are there, things are working. And even that talk track has been accelerated. We have funding through till the end of next year, and there's already an appetite to go and do a seed round early, right? And so I think in the world that we're in, you know, when I look out on the horizon, you know, macroeconomic environment right now, pretty unstable. If people are there backing what we're doing and we can kind of hunker down, put our heads back down at every possible opportunity and continue to just go and build and execute, we want to pop up when the madness is over and be a strong company and be in the right position. You think about all the companies that were built back in 08 that are still kind of the leaders in the space today, born in hardship, kept their heads down, and then popped up when things were good and had that run. And so I think we're going for the same approach as we look out and say, yeah, times are tough. If we're getting funded in this market, you know, with the state of things right now, and then we can just go back and execute and be, you know, as customer obsessed as we are and deliver a great product, this thing will go and come up on the other side in a positive nature. And so that I think that's our strategy going forward.
Good. Well, I can only applaud for that, because I mean, strategy at the end is a strategy. But yeah, when you were talking about, you know, the market and the climate and so on, what do you believe, where is the biggest need for your product in a market like this? Or is it going to be even a bigger benefit when everything kind of opens up again and it becomes easier and easier to sell?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. You know, I think for us, it's both, right? There's a need right now. COVID changed the world. COVID changed the way sales work. You know, I was a very relationship style seller for a long time. Hard to relationship build over Zoom, right? And so I had to pivot the way that I sold. And I think that's kind of essentially where Alicio is at right now is, you know, the world changed. People need different data. They need different insights. They need it in a different way. But even when, you know, I know we're in kind of a famine right now, even when we go back to the feast times, which we believe we will get to, you still need to be able to understand your people and their performance. Just because they're hitting revenue doesn't mean they're going to continue to hit revenue at your organization, right? If they're not doing something every single day, building for the future, they build everything they had in pipeline. I hate to inform you, they're going to churn. They're going somewhere else and they're going to go and get their bag somewhere else. And so that's part of that narrative that we can come in and tell is you have your revenue story, but then you need that productivity story. You need to know that people are building at your organization, building for the future at your organization, and that they're not going to go and churn. And then at the other end of the story is you're going to have people that are maybe getting 10 to 15% revenue attainment. On paper, you probably want to fire them. But now we actually get to go and tell a different story where it's like, actually, these are your hardest working people, whether they're just a little bit unlucky, maybe they haven't been trained the right way. Maybe it's the manager, not that individual that has the weakness. Go and train them, turn the knob just a little bit here and there. They will be the ones getting 150% of quota and they're getting 12 points a day in Alicio, right? And so I think that narrative is going to be important, whether it's feast or famine times. Your people aren't going to go away. They're not going to change. You know, I think we see a future almost like the NFL, right? Or the Premier League. Everyone grows up wanting to play football. You have thousands of kids playing. And then all of a sudden, it just the funnel gets smaller and smaller and smaller until at the end of the day, you just have, you know, the best in the world playing on television. And with the, you know, the influence of AI right now, it's taking away elements of the job. There's not going to be a place for poor performers anymore because AI is going to go and do that part of their job. And so we think at the end of the day, you're just going to have essentially this category of elite sellers that every sales organization wants that they'll pay for. But you need to be able to tell that story, and just hitting revenue is not enough. And so to be able to go and tell that narrative of not only do I hit my revenue, but I'm a hard worker, I do my productivity. They get to go and take that almost like a top trumps card to that next sales organization and say, this is what I've achieved. This is how I achieve it in the good times and in the bad times. You want to hire me. You want me on your team. And it almost gives a little bit more power back to the sellers, which is what we're all about, right? Our slogans, empower the individual. That's what we live and breathe at Alicia. So that's the future we see.
Fascinating. Good one. So out of good year of entrepreneurship, running the company, what has been the most valuable lesson that you've learned so far?
Most valuable lesson that I've learned? I think, you know, what's been most value to me is the ability to go and up-level the network, right? When I was a sales rep, I was surrounded by sales reps and, you know, you were kind of at that level and in your knowledge and your skills and your expertise. You go and change a few letters in front of your name and what your day job is, all of a sudden, I'm now surrounded by people of that caliber and get to go and learn from them. But I am an absolute sponge. Like I know that there's so many things that I don't know. I know that there's people that have done this 5, 6, 7 times in their own lifetime. I want to go and learn from them. And so I think the most valuable thing for me is kind of these new circles that I get to run in and people that I get to talk to and hear from and learn from. And then I get to go and apply those learnings. And so, you know, it takes a level of humility to walk in and say, hey, I know you've done this before. I haven't. Can you teach me? And I'm yet to find someone that doesn't have 30 minutes to share what they've learned in their own lifetimes and in their own experiences. And so I just continue to do that as much as I can. You know, we have this great little dinner group that we've organized. We meet once a week with you know, people that have something to share. And I just go in and I just sit and I listen and I take in as much as I can. And then I also try and do the same thing, right? I've had college kids reach out and say, hey, I'm looking to get into business. Can you give me some words of advice? Right. And it kind of floors me sometimes that anyone would ask me for advice, but that's where it gets to where it's like, pass it on, pass it down. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, this community, the people that I'm able to surround myself with at the moment are so willing to do that. And I think we have to do that. I think that's just part of the job description. So I would say that's been kind of for me, you know, the biggest value in doing what we're doing. I would say down to kind of an individual piece, I think the ability to look outwards, right? To be able to look out and say, we don't have all the answers. Our customers do. The ability to go and say, we don't know what the product should look like. Our customers do. I think it's, you know, a massive pitfall when you start to say, this is how the product should be and look and feel. They're going to pay for it. We would much rather go out to market and ask, you know, what are you willing to pay for? What is it that is top of mind for you? We built the product based off the pains that we'd all experienced in our own careers. Yeah. What are you experiencing? What is the biggest hardship in your job today? And so we do. We try and talk to our customers as often as we can. We try and talk to potential customers as often as we can. And I think that can be a very difficult thing to do when you're the one tasked with making the decisions, right? And going and executing, to kind of have that humility to be out and go and say, I don't have all the answers. Let's go find the answers. And just to sit there with your ear on the ground and listen. And even for us, you know, we were going down a specific road, I would say, early days with the product. It was sales performance. It was this. And then, you know, almost to your point, it felt dense. It felt condensed. And that didn't feel like the biggest pain. That's not what we were hearing from potential customers. Those weren't the pieces that they were going to pay for. And we even had AI on our roadmap from day one. And we sat in a room, all of us together, and said, has any single one of our customers that we've talked to or potential customers asked for AI to do this piece? No. So why are we looking at doing it right now? It's in the future, sure. But today, that is not the pressing pain for the people that have the wallets. So we scrapped it, right? We put it on the back burner. It's part of the roadmap, but that wasn't what was pressing today. And so again, I think going back to that and saying, look outwards, don't say that you have all of the answers. Go and listen, take that time to listen, to understand, and then go and make the decisions based on that.
I mean, I had a couple of questions in relation to this. I think you've all answered them in this answer. So, looking at the time as well, I want to thank you for this advice. I think this is a very well articulated piece of advice to depart with. So, where can people go to find out more about Alicio or to say hi to you?
Yeah, alicio.ai is the website. You can sign up for a free trial. I'll give you my email. It's aaron@alicio.ai. Please reach out. I'm happy to talk to anybody. But yeah, the website is the best way to find us.
Perfect. Well, thanks for sharing the wisdom. I like your approach to things, and I think it's eye-opening for people listening to this. That's exactly the reason why I'm doing this. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much. A pleasure.
And this ends my conversation with Aaron, and I hope you enjoyed it. If so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Aaron McReynolds, co-founder and CEO of Alicio. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.